Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast for a new year, 2022, and we look forward to all that it brings in terms of rugby. This week we're joined by Jim Hamilton, and we'll have a look back at the Edinburgh and Glasgow games from the weekend, two cracking bonus point wins at home for Edinburgh and Glasgow, and we'll look ahead with him to the Six Nations, to Europe this weekend as well, so there's a lot going on. Welcome along, everybody, once again. Happy New Year. And we start the year with a bang, Rach. We've got the big guest, the big dog, the legend that is Jim Hamilton's with us. First up, Jim. You're on hold at the moment, but it's great to see you. Great to come on board. How are things? How are you?
Well, very good. After the introduction, and for the listeners and viewers, we were deciding how it was going to go down. I said that legend had to be in there somewhere again. So, Mossy, I know you don't genuinely hand on heart feel that, but many people in my household do, so thank you for that. And in answer to your question, yes, I'm on holiday, which has been in the pipeline for a few months. It just hasn't materialized until now. And again, we were chatting off air as well, Rachel was saying that I don't feel like I need a holiday in terms of like family time to connect. We did that over Christmas in what was a cold, miserable Scotland, as we know, and the good part of it is the sun. So I'm somewhere nice and warm in Dubai, which is a well-earned treat in terms of the sun. So thank you
good
for that.
You.
And it's class to be back on as well. It's great to be back
on.
Actually, I don't know, but it feels like every week or year's rolled into one now, but it might have been 18 months, a couple of years ago. No, as long as we're in the studio.
Pre-my time, anyway.
Have you not been on since then? Have we not spoken to you since then? That time in the studio?
I've never been on with Jim. So that must have been a good year and a bit.
Time flies, eh? Time flies. And Rachel, how does the son sound to you? Jim saying he doesn't really need a holiday. Well, he doesn't. Do you need a holiday?
I definitely need a holiday. I'm as pale as ever and in need of some sun. But yeah, hopefully, I was saying to Jim before, hopefully be off to Dubai relatively soon with Scotland Women. So be looking forward to a bit of sun, but not so much the pain of playing in 30 plus degrees heat. Not used to that as pale Scots.
Yeah, Rachel, with that, how do you fare? Mossy, I know that you're hosting this. Apologies, cutting across you, but I am interested to know because I struggled massively in the heat in pre-season. So I mean, the way that I played naturally, I loved playing when it was wind, rain, and it was slower than anything you can imagine. But I just wonder that, you know, especially now there is more travel, you know, the Seven Circuit and all these things, and people do these warm weather training. When we're used to being in a country that is cold, what is it, a proper shock when you go and train somewhere hot or play somewhere hot?
Yeah, so I actually did a PhD which looked at the influence of being a team sports athlete in the heat. So I was quite smug thinking I knew how it would feel, I was going to be fine, whatever. We went out and played in Italy for our World Cup qualifiers in September, and I just about died after about 5 minutes. We played in the baking heat around 2-3 o'clock.
That was hot though, wasn't it? That was proper hot.
It was like 35, I think.
Yeah.
I did not fare particularly well. I got through it. I think I blacked out just about with 5 minutes to go. That I stood up from a scrum and celebrated a penalty and just fell straight back down to the ground. But not the best, but not the worst. But I'm hoping to be slightly better prepared this time when we head out there.
What were the conclusions of the PhD and a
that it does have, we looked at like your ability to make decisions and like pick up visual cues, so like pick up your defenders or where the ball is and stuff like that. So that's pretty badly affected by competing in the heat. But also like your brain's ability to stimulate your muscles, it's getting a bit boring now, is also negatively affected. So just now like I'm starting to look at kind of ways in which we can counteract those negative effects and improve performance.
That was my next question. Yeah. Can you do that? Well, can you train for it?
Or so is it just we're doing the some point research
of rolling my sleeves up and being miserable?
Not so much train for it, but we're looking at like different cooling strategies and how they can influence like not just how far you run, but also like the other aspects of team sports performance. And then longer term, we'll look at acclimation and stuff like that as well. So yeah, I'll keep you updated. But yeah, as an individual, I don't respond amazingly to the heat.
I love how science has improved as well, Mossy. Yeah. They would have known in our day, not that we played in ridiculous heat, but we did. Like, you know, there was World Cups and we played over in Argentina. I just used to throw cold water or have a towel on my forehead. But apparently, it's the extremities of your body. So it's your hands, your feet that you need to keep cold. And if you've got a biscuit like myself, I didn't have one back then. But if you've got like a bald spot on top of your head, so you, they're the bits that you put cold things on. Yeah. And that's what cools you down immediately. I never knew that. It'd be like literally cold flannel on the forehead and ice pack on the heart. And then I was wondering why we weren't cooling down. But the reasons are is because it's hands and feet and biscuits. So anyway,
the warmest I think I remember playing in a summer tour in Canada and it was bacon. Mm. And it was Fletcher's Field in Canada, which is quite famous for kind of rugby pitches, but there was no kind of inside changing bit next to the pitch. So at halftime, instead of getting inside to try and cool down and air conditioners, it was just like gather under the stand. This was a test match as well. Gather under the stand, and it was ice towels. So the big eskies, the big ice boxes were full of ice, water, and towels. And you were just handed this towel to wrap around your neck at halftime. But tough guy. I was probably opposite to you. I enjoyed the heat. Give me the heat over the cold anyway. My hands, I've got the worst circulation in the world. My hands would be numb, my feet would be numb. Couldn't catch, couldn't kick in the cold. I was...
Cold and wet means forwards get a bit more ball and have a bit more fun, I think, as well. So that suits me. I quite like a slow and wet game.
Well, it wasn't a bad at the weekend, Jim. Edinburgh, Cardiff and Glasgow, Ospreys weather was pretty good, actually, for this time of year. But two cracking games. Did you see them? Two top performances.
I did. And I got a bit of stick, actually, on social media from a couple of the Premier Sports guys, Tom Shanklin. And it was more around the build-up to the games that never went ahead. So the Glasgow-Edinburgh games. Yeah. And I must have said it. I don't know why. Maybe I was a bit nervous doing the mainstream media interviews. But I said phenomenal, like four or five times.
I was with you on that call.
Yeah, you were with me. Yeah, you were in the car there. You were doing it there, I remember, actually. And I didn't realise until I read that they actually... transcribed everything I said, and phenomenal was in there five times. I was like, Scottish rugby is good at the minute, but it ain't that good. But actually, I stand by my comments, and you know, and I'm quite happy in a way that the games didn't go ahead for the Christmas New Year. Not that I got more time at home, but because them games have built up with how good Edinburgh and Glasgow have been this season to needing fans. Obviously.
Yeah.
You know, we all know that. Everyone says that. And it's great that we're going to get fans back. But it was great to see the games at the weekend. And I thought both Glasgow and Edinburgh would win. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it being as comfortable as it was, especially Edinburgh. I know Cardiff had a few troubles in the lead-up with the COVID stuff and everything that they've had to been through with all the travel situations and stuff. But Edinburgh to get a bonus point before half-time, I think it was. Mm-hmm. Whatever team they put out, they just look so good. I'll say it, they look phenomenal at the minute. They really do. And I think the big thing, and you guys will know, having watched them and looking at the way that the URC can unfold and who the best teams are, is they're going to get tested when the Irish teams come around. When you know, Leinster, Munster, I know Glasgow have obviously played against Ulster at the beginning of the season. But in terms of what we've seen so far, I think what we saw against Cardiff for Edinburgh, what we saw... I think it was five tries for Glasgow against the Ospreys. They're two very good teams, especially when you look on paper. I know regionally and the results haven't been that good. But again, they're two statement wins. And you think about both teams, about who they played before. Exeter and Saracens.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about two of the best teams in Europe as well. And they beat them. You know, Edinburgh went down to Saracens, the Stoneneck Stadium, against a team that... arguably close to being favourites to win the Premiership, and Exeter come up to Glasgow, and the way that Exeter play, Glasgow beat them in that manner.
Yep.
I know I'm flip-flopping a bit here, but it's easy to get carried away, but I don't think I am. I don't think I am, or we are getting carried away with the performances. And what we saw at the weekend going on to there is a kind of a snapshot. No fans, but just got on with the business. Bonus point for before half-time for Edinburgh. It was an easy victory. And no disrespect, the Glasgow game was... you know, slightly tighter in that sense. But again, like a comfortable victory. And I think the future's definitely bright for both teams. It'd be interesting to see how they go in Europe. We're obviously going to talk a bit about the Six Nations, but you talk about momentum, even though it's been stalled because of the COVID situations and them not playing the derby games over Christmas, but where they left off after Europe. So it was class to see.
Did you see the games, Rich?
Yeah, I did. And like, just to echo what Jim says, like, it's not even just they're winning comfortably, they're putting on a really entertaining style of rugby. Both teams now, like, every time you watch Glasgow Edinburgh at the minute, you're watching a good game of rugby. You're watching a game which is littered with top class players. Like, look at the centres in both those teams from the weekend. Yeah. Like, both sets of centres I just thought were phenomenal and just so dangerous, so good in both attack and defence, and like all of them almost available for Six Nations for Scotland. Like, it's a brilliant place to be. But no, I thought both games were brilliant and a load of really good standout performances as well.
You mentioned those midfielders, like the four of them. James Lang's been brilliant for Edinburgh. Mark Bennett, again, absolutely brilliant again at the weekend. It's such hot form. And what Sam Johnson and Sione started in Glasgow. But then you had Chris Harris in the mix, Cam Redpath coming back, Matt Scott's playing at Leicester. Jim, I suppose we'll look at Six Nations anyway. Move on to it now. We'll have a look at Europe as well. But in terms of Six Nations, the first process is obviously Gregor picking a squad. How difficult is it going to be for him to pick a squad? Just even midfielders, scrum halves, right across the board. There's so much to choose from, eh?
Yeah, back row. I don't remember a Scotland team having this much depth and in form. Like you mentioned, you know, Chris Harris who's playing at Gloucester, Gloucester are going really well. Matt Scott playing at Leicester, top of the league. So just to touch on the centres, you know, Sione, he's just added a completely different option for Gregor. Yeah. Now, without me picking the team, he does things that I don't think we've ever really had in a Scotland team. And you mentioned like Mark Bennett the weekend was phenomenal. We know he's a class player as well. And Sam Johnson is back. So the decisions that Gregor's going to have to make will probably be the toughest ones, especially there's no warming into it because of who's coming. Obviously, England first up with fans, which is going to be absolutely amazing. So the energy, the emotion around that. But I think, like you said, Ben, it's like, you know, the centres, like the back row. Rory Darge, I know.
Back row. Yeah. Darge is unbelievable, isn't he?
But Magnus as well, coming in form.
Exactly. So you look at it, and I'm happy to say it, I can say it. You know, Darge is playing better than Hamish Watson at the minute. So it's like, do you pick on form? All out form that we've seen, and we've seen Darge perform against the best teams now and do what he does and get bigged up before the game and then actually turn it on and put a player of the match performance on, you know, or do you go with someone like Hamish, who we all love, obviously the crowd absolutely love him, you know, British and Irish Lions coming back into form. It's been a long season, been carrying a couple of niggles. And that's a question that we would have never, ever asked, ever. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? But, and you mentioned like Magnus as well, Bradbury, unbelievable season. It's almost like it's a different player. You know, Edinburgh have signed a new player because as an Edinburgh fan and commentating on the games, Chris and Rachel, watching them, it's been all seasons gone by and we need to re-sign Bill Matter. And it's great that we've managed to do that and he's one of the biggest names in the URC and around Europe. But it's actually the Scottish lads that we're talking about. You know what I mean? In terms of who can play in that back row.
Bill obviously picked up that knee injury. He's out for, you know, a reasonable length of time. And you know, Edinburgh just performing so well. It's like, and whoever's played for Edinburgh or Glasgow, mainly Edinburgh, because there's probably been more change in their team over the last 4 or 5, they've played the same. The level of performance, the execution, the style of play, it's been the same. Mm-hmm. So that, again, underlines it, the quality it's in there. I don't know, Rach, like, if you are thinking, well, Six Nations squad will be, you know, probably announced in the next couple of weeks, does that mean Gregor chooses a bigger squad? Because, or does that mean probably there's going to be quality players missing out?
Yeah.
Even from the squad.
It's difficult because I don't know whether COVID will come into it in terms of to create a bigger bubble for them to choose from. Might mean he has to pick a bigger squad, which is only going to make his life harder down the line anyway. but I think, you know, there's been a lot of rugby, which is maybe a little bit different to a couple of seasons back with COVID and stuff like that, for him to have seen and see kind of the players that are playing the style that he wants to play as well. But I would agree with like the Rory Darge comment, like every game I watch him at the minute, I'm just like,
amazing.
How is he finding that hole, like that line he's running, like his ability to carry ball and find a way through, and how explosive and powerful he is when he gets through, is so, so good to watch. And I would totally agree that he's playing out his skin. And Jamie Ritchie, one we've not even mentioned, who has been, you know, world-class the last couple of seasons. And it's just, for me, consistent. He's so consistent. And I know that's a really boring word, but it's an important word, I think, in international rugby. His work rate and you know, his savviness around both attack and defence. He's a player who I think both sides of the ball is class, and he gets through a huge amount of work. So for me, he's someone I would always want in a six, because of that kind of that work rate and stuff he gets through. And then you complement that with, you know, a seven like Darge or Watson, who does all the kind of a wee bit more of the flashy stuff. And that is a seriously exciting back row.
There's a few options, isn't there?
Yeah, because on that as well, and Chris, again, not harping back to when we played back in the day, feels like
it was
a lifetime
ago. Everything was amazing. The sun was always better.
Yeah, miles better. Never trained indoors, actually. How weird is that? Never trained indoors when we lean up to a Six Nations match. Then we play against Wales in the, under the stadium, like as in when it was closed. That's me making excuses. But
I thought we just never trained. I think we're just going to miss that indoors bit in the last bit of sense.
No, we definitely trained. But I just, you know, on Rachel's point, it's, you know, the consistency aspect to it. And you imagine, because it is England, and no disrespect to Italy, if it was first up, you could warm into it now. You know, if Scotland were playing Italy first up, you could warm into it. You could maybe make a couple of changes, have Sione in the centre, for example, and maybe put Darge at seven. But actually, when you look at it being England first up, you have to go on international performances gone by, and that needs to be in the mix. So, you know, if Hamish Watson isn't playing as well as Darge, well, Hamish Watson's British Irish line, he's one of the best back rows in the world. Do you know what I mean? So you look at it like that, he's in, you know, Jamie Ritchie, we know that Gregor likes him. I agree with you, Rachel, world-class player. You've got to kind of go with what you know, knowing that you've got lads that are chomping at the bit to come in, and they're in form. So I think it's an unbelievable position for Gregor and the coaches to be in.
See, that's a real important point, and it's probably more a change in mindset needed from certainly maybe players of our generation and potentially fans. Like, you're going to need both in the same game at the same times. You know, and that's the mindset it has to be. It used to be you got picked because you were a better player and you weren't quite as good, you'd be on the bench. That's changed, I think. You really are managing players the whole time. Who's right for that moment? Who's right for that opposition? And I think the Darge Watson one, it's a perfect example. You've got two unbelievably brilliant players that, for Scotland to be as successful as we want to be, you're going to need them both roughly at the same time, doing the same things. And if one starts or one benches or whoever is in the midfield, Sione can play 12 and 13, all the different different links, we're going to need them all, you know? And it's great that we've got them. I think you're right as well, though, Jim. The Six Nations is totally unique. We've spoken every time as players we covered it and talk about it now, like momentum and a fast start supersedes almost everything, doesn't it? And getting off that line, you know, if you win week one, that's it, we're up and running. If you lose week one, it's all, especially at home, it's a real kind of challenge to go over to get that away win the next game week, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember. We played England first last year, didn't we? Is that right? Is that how we started? So obviously the big win.
It was down there, wasn't it?
So it was down there. No one saw it come in. And that kind of catapulted us. Yeah. And I know we didn't beat Wales, but Xander got sent off and we know that it was close and we could have, should have won that game like we have been on many occasions. But like you said, and it is around the Six Nations for whatever reason. That first game is key. And it's not even about performance. It's about winning. You need to win that game. Because you chase your tail, you look at the fixtures for us. You know, Wales is not a place where we're comfortable. For whatever reason, it's just not a place we're comfortable going, playing and winning. So, for whatever reason, we struggle against Wales. It's, you know, just the way that they played. But we are probably in a better position than we've ever been. And you find ourselves saying this every year, but we actually are this year. Yeah. Because we've got fans back for the reasons that we've spoken about with the players, the strength and depth, the form, young lads coming through, and the fact that it's England first up at BT Murrayfield. So you line all them things up, you're thinking, actually, momentum is everything. But, and I can say this because I'm outside of the Scotland rugby circle just, you know, I think this is it. I think that this is it for us now. I really do. And I think that this is the year where, I know we've got 2 years to the World Cup, but the profile of the team, the performances of the pro team, the strength and depth, you know, even the guys that aren't playing Edinburgh and Glasgow are in form. And I look at it now and the fact that fans are back, I could just feel the energy brewing. And we beat England first up. See how I'm already segue. We beat England first up. We go down to Cardiff at the Principality, we win, and then we've got France at home, and that's probably the Grand Slam decider.
You've got it sussed. You've got it sussed.
Love
Jim,
it.
You're on holiday with the feet up in the sunshine. You've got it sussed. Just quantify for us. I know you've spoken passionately about this before, and it is like something you really buy into. Try and quantify or measure how important it is to have the fans back, especially for that first game.
It's unmeasurable, and we all know, and we all know what it's like, you know, Rachel yourself, yeah. Mossy, to play in these pre-season games where there's not many people there, and they're the hardest games to get up for because I'm stuttering and stammering here because I'm trying to contextualise how much it means.
It's almost impossible to describe, isn't it? The feeling you get, the difference it makes.
Well, I get goosebumps thinking about the energy in the stadium, especially at BT Murrayfield, especially in Cardiff, you know, Twickenham. We can go through all of them. You know, it's pointless to me just, I can name every single stadium. And what we've realised now is something that we never really spoke about because it was never a thing before, not having fans in stadiums, is fans make sport. That is it, especially at the highest level when there's all these other things as you're coming through around your team and trying to build the energy within your team. You need people there for them moments where you make a try-saving tackle, you make a break, and that energy that that gives you as you're walking out for the anthems, all these little things that I try and contextualize, even when my kids ask me or when people ask me, what was it like playing? And I was like, I cannot explain the feeling of being alive when you walk out into a stadium and the energy, it's you can't explain it. So I'm trying to, but what I'm saying is we saw it last season, and you saw how tough I was at Twickenham for the Scotland-England game. Very, very weird. Very lucky to be there. Very weird. It was like a training game for England. Scotland had that obviously bit between their teeth. But then you look at the games that we've seen. Look at Scotstoun when Exeter were in town, and that's on a smaller scale. And look at the Damhouse Stadium when Edinburgh are there and the difference it makes just having 4,000 or 5,000 people in there. So you fill up BT Murrayfield when England are in town, like you can't put it into words. So that's how important it is. And the fact that the government have obviously now signed that off, it is a game changer, not just for the players, but for the people of Scotland, the people of England, you know, and the neutrals who come and watch that. Because what happens then, it changes a game of rugby into the sport. And that brings it alive, and that's what it is. And that's what, you know, that experience is what it is. With rugby, people will go to that Scotland-England game, and some of them wouldn't have heard of Rory Darge or Sam Johnson or Chris Harris, you know, or Ali Price or Hamish Watson. They're going for the experience, and they'll walk away and they'll be like, wow.
Yeah.
Win, lose, or draw, they'll be like, wow, what an experience. And that's what it is. That's what the sixth, that's what it always happens. And hopefully now going forward, that's what forevermore.
Funny, because I suppose to try and explain what you're saying, if you dream as a wee boy or a wee girl to play rugby, to score a winning try, you know, a BT Murrayfield for Scotland, and you have this dream and you think about it and you put yourself in that position, the first thing you do is jump up in the air. And one of the real vivid kind of things in your head is the noise and the reaction. You see yourself celebrating and you see everybody jumping up and down. You ask somebody to draw a picture of a try, they'll put, you know, people in the crowd, and it just needs it. It has to be. I was at Scotstoun on Saturday, and it was really strange actually going back to having no fans.
Yeah.
It was almost more stark than what it was last year when we got up and running, and, you know, we were lucky enough, or 2 years ago when we got up and running, it was last year, you know, without fans. It was unique. It was strange. It didn't feel right. But it actually felt even more difficult last weekend because we'd been exposed back to that support. And I mean, Rachel, you'll be the same. You played, you mentioned and spoke often about the game at the Damhouse Stadium against Japan and the effect that was there. It's just inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, we, I think, had about 2 years in between our last home game with fans and playing at the Damhouse against Japan a couple months back now. And like, you didn't realise quite how big an effect it had, you know, the energy you get coming out onto the field at the start of the game, like Jim says, but also in reaction to, you know, the different kind of roller coasters within a game, the ups and the downs, is massive. And I think, you know, it creates a better brand of rugby as well. You know, players who are full of energy, enthusiasm and all that kind of stuff behind them, and also getting, you know, when someone makes a break, getting that extra push from the fans and stuff like that, it does just push them on. So, no, I like obviously our stadiums and our kind of fan levels are nowhere near what the men's game is, but even for us it makes a massive difference. And I'm definitely excited to see a Six Nations with full of fans.
Yeah. Chris, without going on and on, but going back a little bit, the Lions tour to South Africa, people spoke about the games and how the games weren't great. I think if them games were played exactly how they were, and they wouldn't have been, but if there were fans in the stadium and the game was played like that, I don't think, I think there would have been a little bit, because there was obviously a lot of kicking, it was South Africa. But the Lions, for example, is about people. It's about that experience. It's about that energy. It's about watching it at home with your friends and family. And all that put into the mix, as opposed to you sat at home watching it by yourself. I know you could go to pubs, obviously, and watch it, but people were reluctant to. And you're there and you're watching a game of rugby, which is difficult to consume. It's difficult for me to play and to commentate on. There's a lot going on. But my point being, it is around the experience that you get, both as players, coaches, fans, ball boys, that kind of whole encompassing package of being around a sport.
It probably as well, without fans as well, it scrutinises the performance far more, because there is nothing else to speak about, there is nothing else to celebrate, there isn't to take your eye off. So when the TV cameras are looking for, you know, shots, for instance, if somebody's injured or the clock's off, there's not that colour in that atmosphere. So it does. It probably scrutinises even more. So in some ways, it's maybe even harder for the players, because the microscopes even on them even more than normal. But it's great news. Welcome this week that we will be back to full capacity for the Six Nations, and it's just a wonderful piece of news that we look forward to. But the players this week before Six Nations kicks off, we're back in Europe. And you mentioned the games against Saracens and the games against Exeter for Edinburgh and Glasgow. They're back in European action this week. Obviously, Glasgow are back down at Exeter for that return match. We'll start with that one, Jim. There'll be a bit of needle in that after the result at Scotland, won't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is about Exeter, it almost feels like a team where there's a bit of a rivalry now.
Yeah, played them often.
Played them often, like you just said. The fact that Johnny Gray's there, the fact that obviously Captain Stuart Hogg's there. And Exeter aren't playing that well this season. Yeah. And I've called it at the beginning of the season. Again, didn't go down that well. But just in terms of some of the other teams that are kind of growing, it's a natural thing. Do you know what I mean? You can't stay at the top. Other teams are coming through. They're evolving. They want to be like Exeter plus a little bit more. And that game at Scotland, like you mentioned there, I mean, it was fiercely contested. But the way that Glasgow won it, and the physicality, the driving line out, all the things that Exeter are and have been that made them champions. So, it's going to be class to see. Obviously, Glasgow, great that they actually got a game at the weekend against the Ospreys. Otherwise, it would have been very difficult, because Exeter now have been on a run in terms of playing games. So, the cobwebs are off. It seems like Glasgow are in a good position. Well, Danny Wilson said that, didn't he? Before the game, around the COVID situation, some of the guys rested. But they know it's going to be tough to go down there. It is a tough place to go and play.
Do Glasgow try and do something similar to what they did at Scotson? Or do they change it? You mentioned that the big moments that Exeter usually come out on top on the multi-phase near the goal line, the driving line is near the goal line. Glasgow stopped on a couple of occasions and really got the crowd behind them. So do something different? Do they play a bit quicker, a bit more open, use more short sides, do more counter-attack, lift the tempo of the game if they can? What do you think?
It's hard to play like that. It's hard to play as physical as they did against Exeter last time, because a lot of that is home advantage, the energy. And it is hard to replicate that. People will be like, well, just do it again and just play like that again. But it isn't like that. Sport's not like that. When you play away from home and you had that win against them before, even that 1% of physicality drop-off against a team like Exeter...
It's a massive effect.
It does. And again, we've all been there as players. You know that that's what it is. And that is the question. They're going to need to be at that level again, because Exeter absolutely are going to have to raise the game. They know they have to win this game. They know absolutely they have to win this game to stay in the competition. So there's that aspect to it. And I think in answer to your question, I think they need to be at that level again to win it. And they've got to have opportunities go their way. Like you said, going down the short side, trying different things. I hate to say it, probably kick the ball a little bit more because of the energy that Exeter will have in defence because they're going to want to smash some of them, aren't they? Because they're going to be annoyed, they're going to be angry around them things, and they're disciplined as well. Because extra, especially at home,
yeah, it's
if they get a penalty, yeah, they get a penalty on halfway, they'll kick, they'll maul penalty, kick to the corner, maul, and if it stops, then they'll pick and go, won't they? So that's how they build their scores. They have got a few other levels and layers to their game now. Exeter, we saw against Quins when they went down to 14 men. That was the best they played. Rob Baxter mentioned, even being at 14 men, that's the best they played this season. Even though they didn't win, but their energy off the ball, Hoggy looked... I know, it was class, you know, against the champions. It was great. So again, like Exeter are primed. They played that game against Quins and that energy there, and they lost. Mm. So again, they're coming off the back of a loss. So I think, I'll be honest with you, I think it's going to be tough for Glasgow. They're good enough to win. I'm just unsure whether they can get to the level that Exeter will be at because of the desperation and because Glasgow had a comfortable win at the weekend and, you know, Exeter are a champion team.
Oh, we'll see. I think it's 5:30 on Saturday, isn't it? Before that, Edinburgh, they travel to London Irish. So London Irish have had a kind of mixed season as well. It's funny that you would expect them to be better at some games and then games we maybe expect them to be under pressure that they do really well.
They're not
as consistent as they'd like, are they?
Yeah, I think they're currently seventh in the Premiership, and I think their last game against Bath was cancelled, so they've had a little bit of a break.
But some of the stuff they've had has been amazing.
Ridiculous results and also some tight performances. And some of the games which they've lost pretty narrowly. So I don't think they're a team that you can discount, although, you know, past form and maybe last couple of seasons hasn't been the best. I actually think that's going to be a really tough game. They play quite a fast brand of rugby. So from a defensive point of view, in Edinburgh's kind of the way they've been playing in terms of defence, they're going to have to be on it to shut them down early and stop them moving the ball, stop them playing so quickly. But I think that is another game which could be pretty spicy.
It's pretty open. I think it'll be open. Attack minded. Jim, you have seen a bit of London Irish as well. It's quite hard to sum up, isn't it? Like, they've got some real genius, as Ray's saying, ability, but then sometimes don't play as well as you expect them. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. They're very similar to Edinburgh, actually, in terms of how they play. They've got some quality players as well. They've got a mix of Australian lads and local lads as well. They've got a great academy. But like you said, you know, some of the results haven't gone their way, but they've had some big results. I was just sifting through some of them here, actually. They beat Surrey. Did they drew with Surrey?
Yeah,
I think.
It was a draw.
They've drawn a couple games.
Yeah, it's difficult. Isn't it? But I mean, their DNA is an attacking mindset, though, isn't it? I mean, they are an attacking team, really, more than perhaps seasons gone by.
Yeah, definitely. Look, you know, they're a good team. I know I'm stumbling and stuttering around trying to work out their performances. I've seen them a few times this year, but like I said, they've not played. You know what I mean? And that's going to be the big thing for them is, again, you've got Edinburgh who are coming off the back of another win. You know, they must be absolutely buzzing having lost against Treviso this season.
Yeah, round two, yeah.
You know what I mean? That's it. So, again, it's a tough place to go and play. No disrespect to London Irish. Saracens are a huge team. So the energy that Edinburgh would have felt going down would have been huge. The question, I suppose, for me is how serious the London Irish taking this competition off the back of having not played, obviously going into a Six Nations period, there's going to be games in the Prem. So I imagine they will take it seriously, but you're hoping with Edinburgh's momentum and that big win against Saracens. And then the question will be, and I'll probably give you the answer, London Irish will take Edinburgh seriously now because anyone that goes to Saracens and wins, you've got to look at them. But London Irish, good team. You know, they're a good team to watch. They play a good brand of rugby. They've got a mix, like I said, of Australian talent. You know, Paddy Jackson is at 10 and has been playing well for them this season as well. So,
Kyle Rowe, Scottish talent, Kyle Rowe is doing really well down there as well.
I know.
So, I think it will be an open one that Saturday afternoon, that is. And again, as we kind of touched on earlier, it's a Europe, another step up in the URC, which is another step for Gregor and the national team and the national coaches to see the players, you know, not only playing a domestic championship, but European championship before they make final decisions for the national squad. Away from the on-field stuff, Jim, how's your exploits in the Dodd Aid for 2022 going? Are you rallying the troops? Are you laying the foundations? Are you setting the examples? How's it going for you?
Oh, Chris, all of the above, mate. You know me too well,
it's
don't
busy,
you?
Eh?
As vice captain of Scotland once against, I think it was Georgia, it might have been, for 3 minutes. So leadership credentials that I bring into the party. I'm manager this year. So I'm manager of the Barbarians, which last year was the Exiles. And again, Mossy, you'll know me very well. Admin is not a strong point of mine. So I haven't done a lot in terms of managerial stuff. Gabby Logan is my captain. And apparently Jason Fox, a.k.a. Foxy, from the SES, Who Dares Wins. Well, he was in the SES as well. But that as well, that's where people will know him from. They're the captain and co-captain. I think it's more because they're more famous than me, more than they're going to be doing the miles.
They'll come to you for the guidance, though, eh? They'll be knocking on your door. Who can go? Who's the mentor? Well, we'll go to the manager. We'll ask Jim what he thinks. Is that the case?
All I know is I'm the only one that did a Donny Duke on New Year's Day. I was the only one in cold water. And I was absolutely freezing. But
where'd you go for that?
I went up the Pentlands. So I can't remember. I ran up and then I don't remember much after that, really. It was. I tell you what, though, Rachel. Look bloody great on Instagram is all I know. It looked great.
I'll go look it up.
Yeah, which is the main thing. But again, guys, you'll know, I mean, what a fantastic cause. Last year, we raised over £1 million. And I say we, it's more than the people that are fronting it. And, have, you know, we've got an easy role in terms of, like, putting a bit out on social media, going in cold water with a bit of decent music and stuff. It's the mass participation that is really adding to... the weight behind, obviously, this amazing cause. You know, people are signing up and they'll donate 20 quid when they sign up and they'll get a snood and then they'll be associated different regions. I know a lot of listeners will probably know about this now, but I'm sure a lot of them are involved. And what happens is people can either choose to raise money, which a lot of people are. Last year, we, you know, 1.2, maybe a little bit more was raised, or people can just choose to log their miles. It all goes into a pot. And there's a leaderboard at the end, which does matter. But as a Barbarian, we're probably going to win anyway. So it doesn't really matter.
Third at the moment, I think.
I say third. We had about 50 million miles or something. But I'm sure someone was playing funny buggers on the algorithms, just typing in too many miles. So, but what I'm trying to say, and again, Mossy, you'll know because you're closer to Doddy in terms of your playing days than me, is Doddy had this great ability or has this great ability to bring people together. And he did that as a player, which I wasn't a part of. The events and stuff I have been a part of where you're in a room with Doddy, he's speaking, everyone's laughing and the energy that it brings. And we've seen this in this as well. Through the Doddy Aid and the Doddy Gun, what it was called last year as well, that ability just to bring people together, to connect, for us to laugh, to feel the energy and to do something on that for a number of different reasons. Like I said, to raise money, to keep fit, for their own mental health, their own physical health. So for me, it's a humbling experience to be a part of it, but also to see the community that Doddy Aid has formed grow. And you put Kevin Sinfield in terms of what he's done, you know, these ridiculous challenges, the profile that and the BBC and Gabby Logan and Lorraine Kelly and all these people that have added to the mix, it can only be beneficial to the MND community and finding a cure and raising funds and everything, which is the reason why it all started.
Yeah, and it's you hit the nail on the head because the top of that tree is Doddy, and it's his inspiration, it's his attitude, it's his being really that everybody involved is inspired by with the help of a lot of people along the way. Rach, how's you going? Are you logging miles or are you just
I am indeed, Team Glasgow always. Which we are not doing quite as well as the Barbarians at the minute. But I'm sure we'll have a late surge. But yeah, no.
Who's Glasgow your captain? Always. Rachel, who's your captain?
Al Kellick.
Oh, there you go. That's the reason.
Oh, good old Al. He's not here to defend himself. But
I should say, there is a bit on social media, and I don't want to be horrible to Al. I've aged during lockdown. He's put on a bit, isn't he? He's put on a bit of weight, but as in, which is fine, which shows to me he's comfortable. So as his role as Glasgow MD, is he MD or CEO? What is he? He's the boss, isn't he?
MD, isn't he?
And the results that have been going his way, he has become so comfortable that he's not only happy to feel comfortable, but actually to put it out there on social media in HD and be like, look, this is me, this is who I am, and I'm comfortable doing it. So I'm sad to see that, you know, you guys aren't up there with the Barbarians, but nonetheless, it is all for a good
time
course,
yet. It's time yet.
Well, I'm part of Team South, so we've got everybody covered so far. We're just an Edinburgh representative. We'll get somebody on later. Right, Jim, we'll need to get you back to the Sun Lounger. Yeah.
Going dark. It's dark here, but yeah, I'll be going there. I'm heading there.
Moonbathing. Just get out moonbathing. That's as good as anything. In the warm air. But yeah, listen, thanks for joining us. Great to get your insight. Really look forward to getting wet the appetite almost in terms of some of the chat around Six Nations, especially with the crowds back and the form of the players. We'll look forward to speaking to you again soon and enjoy the rest of your holiday. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me again.
Cheers, Jimbo. Well, Rach, it's always good to have Big Jim on. He's a lively character, but he can see and hear his kind of enthusiasm for the game and his enthusiasm for the Scottish rugby at the moment. Really, is obviously he sees a lot of rugby, talks about a lot of rugby, he's involved in a lot of rugby, but he's impressed with certainly Edinburgh and Glasgow starts at the moment and looking ahead to the national stuff in the Six Nations.
Yeah, rightly so. I think, you know, a lot of this stuff that he's chatting around Glasgow, Edinburgh, players coming through and Scotland's prospects are bang on in terms of where they're all at the minute. So it's good to hear from someone who's so enthusiastic about all aspects of rugby. And yeah, like you say, always good to have someone of that kind of character on.
And you're a wee bit jealous of being on holiday or just not really?
Yeah, a little bit jealous. I don't know. But yeah, beggars can't be choosers.
And then otherwise, I suppose we start never spoken about, but good Christmas, good New Year. Obviously, we had a few weeks without a podcast, so all good.
Yes, all good.
Quiet.
Back up in Scotland. Was in training with the girls a bit over at BT Murrayfield. And then back down the road this last kind of 10 days back training with Loughborough Lightning and playing Saracens on Saturday, pending selection. So yeah, exciting times.
And your results have been going pretty well club-wise as well, haven't they?
Yeah, so we had a bit of a slow start to the season, but we definitely kind of picked up towards the end. We beat Bristol the weekend before Christmas, who were top of the league. So we're on the right trajectory, but we play Saracens, who are now at the top of the league after last weekend. So it'll be a really big challenge. They're a really physical side. They're probably the most physical side in our league. Quite a lot of very good rugby brains in that team as well. So it'll be a real tough challenge, but good test for us as a team to see where we're at.
Is that home or away?
It's at home, which is
at home.
Which is good. So got a lot of, well, hopefully should have a good Scottish representation and that Loughborough team as well, so it should be a good day out.
Good. Well, good luck with that. I'll be watching the two teams in Europe this weekend, and as I say, I think the national squad's announced, I think, next week. So right. That's an opportunity for Gregor and the coaching staff to have another look at the contenders in for that Six Nations squad and
tough look job.
Tough job. We'll look ahead to see what it is. But yep. Go well. Enjoy the game against Saracens, and we'll report back in next week. Well, thank you once again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We'll look ahead to next week where the Six Nations squad will be announced, and we'll also be talking to Scotland Sevens head coach Kieran Beattie.